Hello and welcome to Bad End Podcast, episode 70. I remember the episode because the last one was 69. My name is Josh Calixto. I am a writer for various outlets and a gamer above all else. I'm joined by my co-hosts Katie McCarthy of usgamer.net and Kyle Cookstell, who's currently developing a game called Cantata. If you want to wish list that on Steam, that's cool. It's helpful to him, but if not, you know, do your thing. This isn't an advertisement, but we are all here. Say hello, folks.
Hello. Yeah.
If you're like us, you've been sitting down worried, just like this kind of underlying sense of anxiety, worry, stress, a lot of stuff going through your head. Am I going to go out, catch something? Am I going to infect the people around me? Am I safe?
Is Animal Crossing good? Dude,
are you guys thinking like at all times about like the state of your hands?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm like,
I zone out and I'm like, I have like my hands on my face like usual because when I sit on my desk, I'm always like propped up. I'm like, fuck, did I wash my hands recently? But I've also like have not left my apartment, so it's not that scary. Well, you know, it's
weird because like now I know how germaphobes feel at all times because like when.
And like hypochondriacs though too, because I'm like, oh, is this cough that I have the first sign?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Right. It's like every time you sneeze, you're like, oh fuck.
I cough. I've been coughing. I've had little allergies in the morning. I'm not actually sick. Like I wouldn't be worried in normal times, but now is not normal times. COVID-19 is here, folks. We mentioned it like very briefly last episode, but it wasn't like as big of a deal as it is now to the extent that they're shuttering stuff. It's crazy out there. Like, this is not something anyone of us has ever experienced before. No. And anyone out there. And what's interesting is that for the gamer crowd, I want to, everything directs back to gaming on this podcast because this is a gaming show. Everyone's saying, oh, this is like our time to shine. We get to play a lot of video games, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, but I'm also starting to realize how much I like to like get out and not play video games from time to time.
You know, I like to leave the like house every now and then, you know?
Yeah. I'm like, I'm here. I played like 4 hours of League last night. I've been playing like hella League of Legends because everyone is in the same boat and, you know, been playing with a lot of people on the Bad End Discord, by the way. If you subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/badend, you will get access to that. You can play some games with us. But we're all like, yo, like, this is nuts. Like, it's nice that we get the game. But so bad news for people who like social contact face to face. Pretty good news for us gamers. We have been gaming. Kyle hasn't, which as he's been saying, I don't really know what you as a gamer have been doing.
It's like I think it's been playing like a lot of kind of like small things, that nothing that's like a big sort of 30-hour commitment sort of business. It's been playing sort of like smaller things. So I don't know if we want to talk about all of them, but like I played some Death Crown, which is really fucking cool, which I actually might want to talk about. And then like been playing more Zelda.
Like the 2D platform with the big titties or what? Oh no, this Dragon's
You're thinking
Crown.
Dragon's Crown, the Dragon's one from the Crown. Odin Sphere people. Crown. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's a great game, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, that's honestly, I love that team's art. I'm really excited for their new game that's coming out. It's already out in Japan. It's like 13 Sentinel or something. But one of my friends who's a localizer, he was playing it in Japanese, and it just like sounds crazy. It sounds like a crazy game, and I'm very excited for that to finally, hopefully get localized
like
one day.
Odin Sphere and stuff, right?
Yeah,
it's all the same people. Yeah.
That came out during peak, like, calling games problematic time when like that was the thing to
that game
do
just
was
hit
like,
it real like, hard and it's like well everyone's objectified so that makes it
I
better
mean, yeah,
and
like, no,
or just
no.
makes it collectively worse
it's pretty Dragon's Crown like goes totally in that direction like in a way that I find pretty funny actually. It's like they just like they're like fuck you, here's a lot of boobs and you can like poke women or whatever. It's like, okay.
The wizard chick's back was like broken under the weight of her
giant
ginormous breasts.
They're like the size of her whole torso, like basically.
It's like Xenoblade 2 breasts.
Yeah.
That, like, crazy
I mean, I respect going, you know, if you're going to commit, fucking overcommit, you know?
Go like, in, go bro. In. Fucking you do you.
You do guys. You. So this game, Dragon's Crown, is not what I was playing, which is Death Crown, which is this it's a 2D, like the genre is called like micro RTS. So it's kind of like in the vein of something like Bad North, where it's an RTS game, but it's not like StarCraft or Warcraft or whatever other game you play as your RTS of choice. And it's like really simple. It's just like a hexagon map that's like, I don't know, probably like 6x6. And you could basically build three buildings mapped to like Q, W, and E. And then you're like one building gets you money, one building spawns units in one unit, and one building is like an attacking tower. Which is like cool, but the thing that this game is fucking great at is the fucking aesthetic is incredible. It's this like totally black and white pixel art thing that's got this like creepy ass kind of, I mean, like Dark Souls inspired black and white pixel art. But it looks like totally incredible. And like the music is like kind of weird, like music concrete stuff. And it's just kind of oozes aesthetic. And it's fun. It's like, it's really fast to play. A match takes like 5 minutes. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's been part of this thing I've been doing of just like playing sort of smaller, trying to play smaller stuff that has like a longer timeline just to get a taste. So I played that. Then I also played, I think it's like Mindustry. It's like mini industry. It's like a Factorio like
yeah,
game.
Yeah, I've heard of this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Factorio, but a tower defense. And like, we could talk about that if we want to, but you kind of get it from just that. But yeah, I don't know. But in general, like, I have not been playing a ton of stuff. I've been playing like some Minecraft and some Zelda, but it doesn't feel like I've really glommed on to something kind of in a big way. Though Josh, you and Katie obviously can probably speak more to the shit you've been like really digging into. I know Katie, you especially, because your review for it just went out.
Yeah, let's go into the marquee, Katie.
Yeah,
you got the big marquee. Titles.
I've been playing the big game. I got this code like this Friday will be like 3 weeks ago. So I've been playing this game for like 2 weeks ish now.
Doom Eternal, baby. What's up? Back in the game. 2020.
I mean, I have been playing Doom Eternal, but I'm not that far into it. So I feel like I can't like really talk about it because I'm like 3 hours in, maybe. It's fun. The platforming sucks. That's kind of my opinion on it so far. It's like they put too much. There's like things that just like, it's like you get these really intense fights and then it's like, all right, now you're going to jump on these platforms that drop while you're dodging like, these like Mario like fire wheels for like a bit. And it's
2006
like,
first person shooter.
Yeah, it's like weird. I don't know like why they decide to double down on the platforming. But I mean, and I heard it doesn't get better. I was like, maybe it gets better later on. But like from what I talked to, like with our reviews editor who covered it, it doesn't. It's just like a weird pacing style of like fight, platforming or puzzle section, fight. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
But really, not Doom Eternal.
But yeah, so I've been playing Animal Crossing New Horizons, the new
Hell yeah.
Animal Crossing game. I believe this is the longest gap between a mainline Animal Crossing game ever. Like, I think it's like been like 7-ish years. And I think it's the longest gap, which is shocking to me. But I guess when you think about it, it's like, oh yeah, it was like 3DS, Wii, DS, and then GameCube/N64 in Japan. So it's like, it has been quite a while. And it feels like this game feels like they're kind of like doubling down on what they did in both New Leaf and in Pocket Camp, because there's like a lot of crafting. And at first I was like not a fan of the crafting, because like your like tool set's like very limited. Like what you can make is like very limited. It's like, ugh, this is a boring like furniture. It's just log like tables and benches. But like the deeper you get, like I'd say like past week one, you get like so much shit. You start unlocking a bunch of stuff. Like every day you're getting like a bunch of new recipes, either from like your villagers who you go and talk to, or like just like finding them washed up on shore, messages in a bottle. And I feel like they've done a good job with this Animal Crossing and giving you like goals to work toward. Like it feels more like a checklist of stuff you want to do. Like there's still you can still do like the aimless, I just want to live in this town and make my town pretty type thing. But for those who want like more of a guide or like something to do, there's like a bunch of like, there's recipes to craft. There's like this whole new Nook Mile system of like little quests you can do and everything.
It's like mini achievements.
Yeah, it's basically like, yeah, it's like achievements, and then you get like a little like second currency that you can spend on exclusive like Nook Mile stuff.
Wait, can I ask you something about the crafting stuff?
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell, like, from the crafting why it exists separately from, like, a separate furniture set. Like, is there something about the crafting stuff that makes it different from just, like, the, like, I don't even know what the equivalent theme would be. But it was weird because it just seems like, oh, why is this not just, like, craftsman style that you put in your house? Like, why, what makes crafting stuff different than just normal furniture?
I mean, you craft it, like, with stuff you find. So you can, like, you have, like, a little blunted axe. I don't even remember. I feel like I don't remember this being in the past, but where there's, like, an axe that chopped down trees and an axe to just get wood, which I feel like was not a thing, but I don't remember for sure. But you have, like, a blunted axe that doesn't chop down a tree, but you can just get wood from it. So you have, like, three types of wood. There's softwood, hardwood, and regular wood. And you use those, and those, like, go into building shit. But there's also, like, iron or stone or gold or, like, all these other, like, resources that you kind of, like, get throughout the environment. But there's also stuff like, oh, I want to make a cherry print wall, so I need to, like, collect a bunch of cherries to make that. So it's like there's, like, silly stuff like that. And, like, and then you can, there's also a new, the customization system's back, but it's, like, different. You can only customize the stuff you're crafting, but not everything's customizable, but most of it is. So that's, like, that's, like, a big thing it has going for it. It's, like, all the stuff in your, or nine, I want to say, like, 90 or 80% of the stuff you can craft, you can customize with, like, different colors or different, like, make it look different, like, visually. And it's just, like, more robust. And I feel like there's just, like, there's just in general more to work toward. Like, I'm working on building a giant mech right now, which I don't have all the components for yet, but I'm going to get there one day.
That sounds dope. So, like, the crafting stuff is, like, specifically for patterns to, like, kind of customize it beyond, like, just set whatever.
Yeah.
More or less.
I mean, the set stuff doesn't, I mean, there's, like, sets. So there's, like, sets in the crafting section and, like, when you go to, like, Nook's Cranny. But it's not like you're getting, like, a furniture set. It's like, oh, like, here's, like, the wooden block, like, set. Or here's the log set. But it's not, like...
For crafting, right?
Yeah, for crafting. I mean, it's, like, separated and named that way. But I wouldn't say it's, like, super, I don't know, like, essential or whatever. Or, like, necessitated, I guess. I don't know. It's definitely, like, yeah, like, the more I'm playing, the more, like, I'm getting, like, 3 to 4 new recipes each day of just, like, new random shit. Like, new fences or new, like, weird other shit. So it's just, like, a lot. Huh. It's really, like, rewarding your time in a way that I think other Animal Crossings didn't quite do. I will say, like, and it onboards you a lot. I would say maybe too much because I feel like the first, like, week and a half are kind of, like, tedious and... The music also, the hourly music does not kick in until you, like, hit, like, a major milestone, like, about 8 days in.
Yeah, I saw that in your
in,
review, and I was like,
which
that's
is, like,
insane.
It was, that the music was driving, like, me and my guides writer, we had, like, a like, Slack channel for us just, like, talk about this game and, like, share what we're, like, discovering. And we were both like, are we going crazy? This is the, just, like, one piece of music, right? Like, this is crazy. And it was just, like, this, like... It's fine at first, and then you're reviewing. We're playing so much Animal Crossing, and it's, like, I poured, like, 70 hours in the past 2 weeks into it, and it's, like, it's just, like, it was, I was so happy. Like, once it's, like, when you open, I think, Resonant Services, which is, like, the first, it's, like, the Nook's, like, Tom Nook's, like, tent, and then it turns to a building, and then, yeah. So when that opens, then, like, it feels like Animal Crossing begins in earnest. It's like, oh, now it's, like, now it's begun. Now Animal Crossing is here. And here's the music. And the
Animal
music's
Crossing
great.
Begins.
And the new music's great. Like, the hourly music is really good. There's, like, I think it's, like, the 2 p.m. track is really good. It has this, like, weird, like, I don't even know how to describe it. It has, like, a really weird vibe to it. It's a little more funky. Like, this Animal Crossing is, like, a funkier tone, which is
strange.
It's
like a island vibes going on or something? Like,
yeah, I mean, but I wouldn't, like, classify, like Polynesian, like, Hawaiian music. I wouldn't call that funky, but the music in New Horizons is definitely, like, funky. It's weird, but it's good. Like
some reggae stuff going on?
Not reggae. Like, I'm, like, talking, like, more, like, Parliament type stuff. Like, or not that, like, per se.
Oh, okay.
But that's, yeah, cool. It just has, like, a funky vibe, I would say. Mostly.
Would you say, okay, they obviously added new features, there's new stuff going on with Animal Crossing, But on the Animal Crossing index, does it still feel like Animal Crossing that you know and love? Or has the stuff that they changed kind of knocked it out of the realm of like other, quote, better Animal Crossing games that you would prefer?
I mean, I would say this, like from what I've played, it's definitely my second favorite. I've only played City Folk and New Leaf and then Pocket Camp. So I didn't play like the OG one or the DS one. So maybe I'm not like the authoritative voice on the best definitive Animal Crossing. But I would say like New Leaf is still my personal favorite just because I still feel like New Leaf still gives us kind of like a lack of control that I really like, which I kind of talk about in my review a little bit, which is up on usgamer.net. Where I think with like New Horizons, we're given like too much control of the island, which is cool, but I feel like it kind of like lessens the like community aspect of it a little bit. It's like, oh, now I can like literally change the direction of rivers on my island. Now I can like change a cliffside if I want. I can like build shit anywhere, which I like. The one thing I really do like about New Horizons is you could drop any type of furniture anywhere, which is a great change. I'm so happy they did that because I'm just making weird like in areas and everything on my island. But like the, I don't know, like the terraforming stuff, I'm just like, I just unlocked it recently, like after my review went up actually, so it's like I barely gotten to mess with it, but I'm just like, I kind of wish this wasn't here. Like, I don't think it needs this. I wish I kind of like had to live with the island I chose in the beginning, but now it's like I can make it however I want. But I've already put in so much time just making the island, like putting houses and like buildings and planting trees and flowers. I feel like I've already put so much effort into that. I'm like, I don't want to like change it up now. Like, I kind of want to just like live how it is now because I kind of have it in like a nice state and I want to keep iterating on this state. And yeah, I don't know.
I think wonder if like,
oh, sorry. Yeah.
I wonder if like part of that is, has to do with, I mean, like you mentioned, it's been 6 or 7 years since the last mainline game. And like the sort of like the culture of people who play Animal Crossing has really developed since then in terms of like, I mean, there's like so many like Tumblr blogs that like share patterns and stuff and share houses and friend codes. And like, I really wonder if some of that customization stuff they've added into the game is to sort of lean into like those sorts of audiences that want to be able to share all of their crazy stuff.
Oh, whereas before, like,
you could share like your town and it was like, but it would still kind of look like your town and there wasn't so much stuff you could do. But now it's like, oh, you can like make your town look like a totally different town than someone else's town. So it incentivizes you to like play online or like share your shit on Twitter or like share like Animal Crossing was a game that used to be so like really personal and you can still like share your room or something. But like the appeal of going to someone's town was never that you were at their town. It was that you go visit their house. And I think it's sort of like expanding it to say like, oh, like, well, now the island is your house. It's just
yeah,
everything it's just a big house. Is just there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I've literally been like putting stuff that I want out of like my, or outside of my villagers' houses. Like I've been decorating their yards for them. It's like, it feels like I just have like too much say. Like people trust me as the island representative way too much. Like they're just like, yeah, put that shit there. I don't care. Like, yeah. And okay. So here's a funny thing I've done. So I've put record players and like stereos all across the island, like in just different areas, because I have it kind of like very like sorted out very specifically. And I on every like record player, I have had this song Comrade KK play, which is like this very Soviet sounding like KK slider song. And now the animals will sing it, like they'll be walking around and just like singing it to themselves. And it's so crazy.
That's fucking dope.
I don't remember this. That's like so a thing cool. In past games. I just didn't know it because I didn't
way.
It's crazy. No way. It's like such a cool thing, but it's also like driving me insane. I'm like, why did I choose this annoying ass song? And now everyone's singing it. And I also have like Bernie flags I made. Like I made a Bernie like logo. So it's like all my characters are campaigning for Bernie, which is yeah, go Bernie. Anyway,
they're all socialists.
We're all socialists.
KK
dem socialists, whatever. But it's weird. That's like a weird thing I noticed, and I don't know, it's just it still feels like Animal Crossing is still great. I'm still gonna spend like an obscene amount of time playing this. I'm really excited to play online when that goes live this week, because I feel like with the customizable islands, we're going to see some cool shit. Like people are going to be sharing like crazy stuff. Like what I people mean, could do like in New Leaf. They like, did,
like the direct they did, like whatever, like a month ago, when they showed that like someone had made their town look like a, I don't know what you'd call like the sort of aesthetic or style, but the way that Bioshock Infinite is, that kind of like chummy, like. No, it wasn't like Art Deco, but it was like you think about like the way a classic Infinite. Popcorn tin looks. Yeah, Infinite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like an old Americana. It's
like
got that
like Americana-ish, but like not quite. But like someone made their Animal Crossing town look like that. And they had like fucking like popcorn things outside. And I was like, holy shit, that looks like some boardwalk on like some seaside town. Those little
like red, white, and blue like half circle like tarps that go.
Yeah.
Like,
stuff like
that. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. It's like stuff like that. And like, but they made their town look like that. They showed it for like 5 seconds. And I was like, oh my God, like that just looks totally different. Which I think, like you're saying, Katie, it's kind of overwhelming at first. And I'm almost of the opinion that like, I like Animal Crossing when it's sort of cozy. You don't have that sort of feeling of like needing to make your island nice. But at the same time, it'll be really cool to like, go visit other more creative people's islands and be like, wow, you really fucking went for it, didn't you?
I'm really excited to see what other people do. It's going to be like with Dreams, right? It's like, I can't build shit in Dreams, but I'm excited to see what everyone else does with it. And like, yeah, like what people built with New Leaf alone was really amazing. Oh, so I'm really excited. Like this has like built-in tools. It's not just like dropping a design on the ground. You can like make a specific tile for something. And it's like, it's just way more robust. One thing that is annoying about designing is you can't use like a stylus like with like Super Mario Maker 2, you know, like how you could use a stylus for design, like designing levels. You can't do that in this game, but you can use the touchscreen to type messages and stuff, which is just weird. I'm like, you have the functionality here. Like I was thinking like when I was around my Rio, I was like, oh yeah, like you can do, because I was about to say, or I was originally had my first draft like, oh yeah, and there's no touchscreen support. But then when I was like thinking back on it, I was like, wait, no, there is. Like, I typed in a message. Like, at one point, I was, like, typing in a name for, like, a design. And I was like, how was I able to do that? But not actually, like, draw something with a stylus that works with the Switch. Like, it's kind of ridiculous. And I hope they get backlash on that and, like, fix that in a patch or something. But maybe not. I don't know.
It seems just so tedious.
It's so tedious. Every design takes so long. Like, I've made so much stuff because I, like, that was one of my favorite things to do in New Leaf was just, like, make stuff and share them in QR codes. And luckily those carry over with the app that's launching later this week, or it's like with the Nintendo Switch online thing. So like all the QR codes from New Leaf carry over. I'm really curious how those will look, but I'm excited for them nonetheless.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Mine will look like shit because everything I did in that game was bad. I was just like throwing new pieces of furniture into my room to like get people to come visit me. What can you do to like interact with other people's spaces? Because I've noticed with myself, any online game or any game that requires or encourages creativity, like I'm talking about like Hearthstone or Runeterra or anything like that, where it's like build your own deck. I need like someone to show, I need to see like what something good looks like so I can like imitate and then like do my own thing with it. But I also don't want to just like look at that thing. Like in Runeterra or Mario Maker 2, for instance, I can play through other people's levels. I can play decks that other people have made. And then I can be like, oh, this like feels so good. Oh, you know what? I wish this deck had this, or I wish this level had this. And then I can do that. But like, I don't want to just like look at these levels or look at these decks and be like, oh, that's a cool idea. But I feel like in Animal Crossing, there typically hasn't been a way to like interact with other people's spaces or things that they've created. Is there anything like that in this game? Or like, how are they encouraging you to check out stuff that other people have built?
I mean, I honestly don't know yet because online hasn't been live for the review period. I think it goes, the day one patch goes live like tomorrow at 6, which is weird because that's a Wednesday, but they tweeted it out. So I'll be playing online tomorrow starting. So I don't know, but I mean, they do like I feel like they do a lot of onboarding with this Animal Crossing compared to past ones. It's a little grueling a bit because they maybe tutorialize a bit too much, but I mean, it's also like this is also a kid's game too. It's like they probably need to be helping kids out more, especially because there's like systems like crafting and they have to wrap their head around that and stuff. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like visiting your villagers is a way to get like inspiration or seeing like how they, 'cause they kind of like all have their own style. So like visiting your like animal neighbor people, they all have like their own like distinct look in their house, which is really cute. Like I visited my boy Jacques, who is a very snooty bird. And he has like a DJ set in the middle, and he has like a neon sign that says open above it. And then he just has like random seating on the side. So it's like kind of like a club. It's like very silly. And then like
the villager shit is
like,
always crazy.
I think it's like Eric. He's like a deer, but he has like all like log campground type furniture in his place because he's very like. But yeah, I feel like that's like kind of like a good way to kind of like see how like a house could look if you like wanted to have a cohesive style and stuff, because like your villager, and then there's some who are messy and just don't care too. So it's like, that's funny to see too.
I just had a dream idea.
Oh,
okay. What if there was like a tutorial system that taught you like the basics of like interior design via Animal Crossing? Crossover, collab, Animal Crossing x Muji.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be like the best
honestly
thing ever?
I hope we see weird ass cross, like, you know, like there's the
Mercedes
Benz
DLC and shit
in Mario Kart.
Yeah.
They need to do some of that shit. They need to do Muji,
I'm for, like,
IKEA
Supreme drops and Animal Crossing. IKEA.
League of Legends has a set of Louis Vuitton skins.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you
they
know
gotta
that?
Do that. They gotta do like Louis Vuitton at the Able Sisters, which is the clothing store.
Right.
I mean, they do with Uniqlo stuff. Like, they have the Uniqlo collabs. Yeah. Like, surely they'll do, like, something.
Uniqlo would be good. That Uniqlo U collection they always do is fucking great. Like, just great basics.
That's, like, teaching you what the next wave is. I feel like this new Uniqlo U set has been, like, a little, maybe too far-reaching for a lot of Americans.
Oh, yeah, there's a
like,
lot of, like, wide leg stuff.
Boxy
and it's like,
fit.
Yeah, I like a boxy fit, but, you know, it's like, I gotta...
Some of that stuff is, like, real...
It's
if
like
you're
all
wearing
boxy.
That, people are going to be like, what are you, some kind of fashion killer? What are you doing? I don't know why I just did that voice for that, but
all right.
What else we got? What else we got for Animal Crossing?
I mean, that's pretty much it. It's just, like I have some like minor complaints, but they're so minor. It's like, this is so slight. It's like, it's a great game. It's definitely going to be like... one of my game, I mean, Kentucky Route Zero is still my game of the year probably, but like this is definitely like my number two so far, but also it's been a weak year, so who knows.
She's calling it early.
I'm calling it too early, but you know,
they're like adding shit too, right? Like,
yeah,
they're adding in KK later, they're adding in like
they
gonna be like for sure DLC, like
they've like said they're gonna do like events, like the day it launches,
oh,
it's getting
God,
Bunny Day
that.
Event, so it's like it's gonna have a Bunny Day event for Easter this Friday, so that'll be fun to see like how that is. Like, I wonder if it'll be like Stardew Valley where it's like, oh, here's like a little party we have in the town square or what. I don't know how it's gonna shake out, but yeah, I'm excited to see like a more more online but not very online savvy Nintendo like taking this on with a true console. Like, I'm excited. Like, I really love City Folk on Wii, but this is obviously way more capable of just shit, so
yeah,
I'm very excited to see where this develops. I'm excited to see people make stuff and make cool towns, and yeah, I like the heavy customization isn't my thing per se, but I think it's a net positive for the series. I think it's gonna be like really cool to see what people make with this. So, yeah,
it's cool that like it feels like sort of the canonical Animal Crossing game now. Like, it doesn't feel like it's got some gimmick. It doesn't feel like it's trying to do. I mean, the island thing is definitely it's like pull, but it's not like you're playing Happy Home Designer or you're trying to play Pocket Camp and you're just like wanting like what is like the big step for Animal Crossing? And like, this is it. It's like this is where this is like a new ground that the game, you know, the next 20 years will grow from. And it's cool to. I mean, it's crazy right now that the Switch is doing this, like for Mario, Zelda, Animal Crossing, I mean, maybe Metroid, like all this other stuff. That's like all these games that have lacked a real release for so long are now getting like you can point to someone and say, play this Animal Crossing. It's not going to be like play this with caveats or whatever else. It's like, this is the one, like this is, it's super cool to kind of have that. And like fucking finally.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's, I'm excited for the world to get their hands on it, in addition to Doom, which I'm excited to keep playing because I'd have nowhere else to fucking go. So I'm just gonna. Well,
we are gonna get our hands on it soon.
Soon.
And soon. It's gonna stay in our hands for a long time. I wanna so Katie, you played another game that I wanna get to. I kinda wanna talk about my game that I played real quick before
Fine.
We get to that.
Fine. I see
but
how it is.
I also want to take this opportunity to kind of sidebar here for a sec, because we got a little message tweet within the past week that I wanted to address on the show, because, you know, we get a lot of great comments from y'all, but we get some criticism sometimes, and we got a little criticism via the Twitters directly mentioned us in there. So we got the at. And I'm going to read this off real quick. Okay. Bad Amp Podcast has got to have the most incoherent critical lens I've ever witnessed. Or the lens is primarily aesthetic without an aesthetic philosophy. Okay, fair enough. And then I said, it's tough because we each have different critical perspective that often disagree with one another on what constitutes good writing / aesthetics, etc. But I do think we could each do a better job of vocalizing our aesthetic biases and preferences. Thanks for the input. And then they said, oh no, why did I tag face with a little drip coming down from the forehead? Nervous. But if you're interested, I think maybe if I understood what specific games exemplify good practices and what is important to each of you, I might have an easier time figuring out a philosophical stance than just a smattering of things you don't like. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to kind of maybe state stuff that we look for in games, maybe stuff that we don't like. It is different for all of us, which is why I think that's part of what makes this podcast what it is like, we don't all just agree that like this thing is good, this thing is bad, whatever. And I think that we all value kind of different things, which is how a lot of different video game podcasts are, right? But I think in a lot of other video game podcasts, what they look for in games is a lot more like clear cut, where it's like, I like shooters with smooth shooting. I like platformer, you know, like it's more genre oriented rather than like based on like specific aesthetic preferences and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's very clear that we all have our own preferences when it comes to stuff like this. But if you're like a first time listener coming into the show, it might be kind of confusing where you're like, who are these people? Why is Kyle such a curmudgeon about every game? Like, you know, why is Josh such a nerd when it comes to card games, all that stuff? So what I would like to kind of go down the line here and say, like, what are your preferences when it comes to like what we look for in games and stuff like that, and maybe try to come up with like some overarching bad end things that we are kind of looking for, so people get like an overarching sense of what we're into, you know? Does one of you want to start? Maybe Kyle?
Sure. I think one thing to say up front too is that part of the reason we started this podcast is that when we talk about games and we talk about like being critical of games, we specifically share the sort of the way that we think critically about a game. So even though we like a lot of different stuff, we're still coming to things, I think, with the same sort of like critical lens to think about something. And I say the word critical, which I know a lot of people might like conflate with like being sort of like, you know, dismissive or something. But I think that for all of us, I think it should be said too that like we've all been playing games forever. It's not like we've just started and we're like started a podcast. Not that like the creds matter so much as like we are in a specific place in our lives where I've been playing video games now for nearly 30 years. And like what I liked when I was 16 and what I liked when I was 20 is different than what I liked when I'm 25. And now I'm almost 30. Like, I mean, maybe I haven't been playing games for 30 years. Maybe it's been like 25 or something, but it's the sort of thing where I think our tastes have changed. And I think that having played like so many fucking video games for so long, we have a sort of perspective on games where like I don't have to play everything. I can like see a game and like see what it's doing and be like, okay, cool. Like I don't need to play more Scourgebringer. Like I know what that game is going to give me. I don't need to play, you know, whatever new over the shoulder AAA action adventure game is going to have, because I probably know what it's going to give me. And like even if I don't, like that what those games are typically offering isn't what like me now I'm speaking as Kyle and like interested in. And I think normally what I like to see in a game, like what really draws me to a game, is something that like doesn't overstay its welcome. That doesn't mean a game like can't be long, but a game that specifically the stuff I really like is stuff that like essentially presents some like some number of things, whether it be like a mechanic, a story, like a way of interaction or something else, and then kind of sees that through to its logical end and then like ends. I think in some games, like one of my favorite games of all time is like 30 Flights of Loving, which is like 15 minutes long or something. Like that game, I think, is a perfect game. Like all the way through, I think it does some cool stuff. It kind of plays with it, leaves a few open ends, and then ends. And it's like, this is an amazing experience. Also, we have a whole fucking podcast dedicated to Disco Elysium, which is like 30 hours long. And that game, I think, actually probably cuts itself a little too short, and it probably could have been 60 hours long because there's so much shit in that game that I like left like wanting more from it, but still felt like it was, you know, effectively doing what it was trying, or what I thought it was trying to do. So that for me can kind of like take a lot of different forms. I think generally for me, like as well, like I don't play a lot of AAA stuff anymore because I'm just not like excited about it really. I also like strategy games, which I don't really talk about on the podcast, but it's in part why I'm making a strategy game. So yeah, I guess I really for bad end stuff, I think it's a lot of like looking at things that are like kind of like slightly off kilter. Like I don't want to say the word indie, but like we all loved A Short Hike and like Pikuniku, and like we gave Oberdin like Game of the Year. Like stuff like that is much more where our mind is at. And I think that stuff that's just sort of like trying to be a video game to be a video game is not something that we're interested in.
I think like we like stuff that like values our time. Yeah. I think one of the reasons why we tend to gravitate towards shorter games is because those are more likely to be those like cram packed everything in one small package that like it's not doing anything extraneous, not obsessed with these little systems that are just there to like be content. You know, I think there's so much content in video games that's just not necessary, and you're less likely to find those in those games. Not that every short game is great, because we played a lot on this podcast too that we're like, we're just not into it. Like, and I also want to posit something here that I think I've been thinking about a lot, which is that I think a lot of people are very critical of video games. They just don't think about it. They don't realize it because they don't like take the time to go in their brain and be like, what to sort out their thoughts on what a game was. Think about if you get a new game on Xbox Game Pass, or you get something for 10 cents on Steam that was on sale for like a couple of days, or you get something in your Humble Monthly, you start playing that and then you never play it again. You only play it once, and that happens to every person who plays video games. A lot of the time, that's going to be a game that like other people loved, right? Like there's so many games that people bounce off of that like a lot of other people liked. And you believe it or not, you were critical of that game. There's a reason why you didn't play it anymore. And this happens to every gamer. And I think that there's a lot of things that people don't acknowledge because they only like look at the parts of the game that were good, or because of they played something for 40 hours, therefore it must be good, and therefore like immune to criticism, or like why even talk about the things that we didn't like if we got 30 hours of fun out of it. And yeah, well, I see that stuff. It's also like, it's good and important to be like, what do we like about this? What didn't we like about it? And state that, which is what we do a lot on this podcast. When I play a game that I bounce off of, when I play something that rubs me in a kind of a weird way, I'm not like playing it out of spite or bitterness. I'm just like, I might enjoy a game like Ori 1, and I'm going to talk about Ori 2 pretty soon, but I'll play a couple sessions of that game, enjoy my time well enough that like I want to keep playing the game. But that doesn't mean it's like necessarily a great game, or that I don't have anything to say about it. I tend to kind of go back in and think about that stuff after the fact, after I've finished playing the game, after I finished a play session. I sort my thoughts and go, okay, here's what I like about that, here's what I don't like about that. And I think with video games, you get used to the things that you like, where it's like, oh, the jumping feels good. Or it's just something that's like, so it's like when you eat McDonald's and you're like, oh, that burger tasted good. But then afterwards you go, oh, well, like there's better ways that I could be eating. Like I could, but they're like, you're constantly juggling like a million different things. People think critically about the stuff they do all the time, whether it's like eating food or what have you, or watching a movie or watching a TV show or whatever, but they just don't like take time to put that into words or like care about it, which is what we do on this podcast. And which I think is important because like self-observation is good. I think, I want to get to more specifics, but first, Katie, what do you think is like your overall like taste spectrum?
I don't know, because I feel like I'm kind of naturally, I have to be all over the place. Like I don't really have the luxury of just like focusing on JRPGs or whatever, or indie games or anything. Like I kind of have to like see the good and bad in everything. So I've been like, I was like, oh, long, this was like maybe 3 years ago, and someone in like the comments of like an article I wrote like said like, I don't know like what you like, Katie, you seem to hate everything. And I was like, do I like come off that way? And I just feel like I'm like, I've always considered myself a realist, but in reality I'm probably just a pessimist. And I don't know, like I feel like when I look at the games I really love, like my favorite game, like Persona 3, like I just like holistically love that game. Like I think everything about it just kind of works in tandem with each other, like the themes of that game, the social links, the like very brutal and difficult combat, just like the kind of like morbid like music and like the hip-hop kind of like juxtaposes it in like a fun way. But I don't know, like everything in that game just like really comes together in a way that is rare in video games to me, at least. But then I don't know, there's like stuff, yeah, like I feel like I talked about this last week, like Dead Cells, which I was playing a lot before I got into Animal Crossing, and that game just like feels good to play. It's just like snappy, it just is a perfect feeling game in my mind. So it's, I don't know, it's like a kind of mixture of, is it, does it all come together in a way, like is it all clicking for me even in spite of its flaws, or is it just like very smooth and feels good to play? Like I feel like I'm like, I'm also kind of critical of art. I think that's like a thing, is like aesthetically, like I guess like my aesthetic philosophy is like I have like a very particular style of art I like. Like it's pretty, if a game is ugly, it's pretty hard for me to get past that, honestly. Like it's odd, like definitely a not blind spot, I'm trying to think of a word, it's definitely something that like holds me back, I guess, I don't know, from critical analysis. But yeah, I guess that's it.
Yeah, and I there was another comment from this person that I didn't realize because it wasn't threaded into the original one that I was looking at, but it says, I guess they like good writing, but what counts as good to them is pretty hard to decipher, and they're really frustration averse. I guess they like books, they should start a book podcast. I like video games too, but for the record. But
I play way more games than read books, to be completely like, I read, but I don't read as much as I should. Like, I don't know. I think games are just easier to slot in with my life because of the nature of my job. I don't know.
We do like good writing, that's for sure. And I think
people who like play a lot of video games have like lost sight of like good writing. Cause I think it's, and this is a known fact, like, so much video game writing is just bad.
Yeah.
It's not like, that's not up for debate. That's not an opinion.
Also, in games where the writing just doesn't matter. Like, I've been playing Doom Eternal, which is like leaning into the story more surprisingly, but like, I am not playing Doom Eternal for the story. I am playing that for the combat. Like, that, like,
which, like,
that's it.
I think, to be clear, like, is fine. Like, I don't think any of us are coming to video games and saying, like, we demand good writing. Like, that is not a thing that when I play a video game that I'm like, you know, dropping it if the writing is bad.
Yeah.
I think when something does have good writing, I think that that is great. And I also think that people don't understand that game writing isn't also just text. Like, that can be, like, I mean, I said 30 Flights of Loving earlier as like a really great game, and that game has no text in it. It's fully a story, which is written. Like, this, I think that when people say writing, like, they assume that we're talking about dialogue, which is also just not the case. And so we like good writing for sure, which also means we just like good scenarios and like plot, like,
good style.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now. Yeah. Just like style. Like, I don't think it's a thing that we actively seek or will, like, you know, pass a game on because I don't like go and play Dead Cells or whatever because I'm expecting good writing. Like, I don't play Slay the Spire or like whatever the fuck else because I really want good writing. And that's like not, that's not why I come to games. It's more of like, if something has good writing, I think any of us really would be excited about that. It's not that something that we like are looking for or like want, but if it's there, like, hell yeah, we're definitely going to talk about that.
Well, and another thing is that like, it's all, when you're talking about video games, a lot of it, or any medium for that matter, a lot of it is contextual, right? Where you kind of measure like, what's the game going for? What's the game doing? And then you measure like the effectiveness of that versus your own, whatever rubric you're using. And if I'm playing like an 80 hour RPG where I'm reading through like screens of text, like all at a time, or I'm watching 30 minute cutscenes, then the writing does matter because you're telling me as the developer that like this story matters. Here's the thing that I wrote. Here's this writing. And if it's like not good, then it becomes this video game thing of like, it's just an excuse for you to like write for a long time and then just like say stuff that you're just putting into a video game when it's like, I enjoy this, the other systems, but like, why are you exposing me to this many hours of writing? Like it's annoying or whatever. And I think there's a lot of criteria like that, where it's like stuff that we like, stuff that we don't like, that doesn't matter unless you're like shoving it in my face as like, this is the thing that you should be looking at. And then I'm like, well, if you're going to force me to look at this for an extended period of time, like I should hope it's good. I should hope that there, like, it doesn't have that many issues. Whereas like if the writing is taking place in the background, like in a Doom, for instance, then okay, it's not a big deal. If the shooting is still good, which is what I'm playing the Doom game for, then I'll still enjoy it or what have you. But you know, so I think I want to come around to the frustration thing too. I think the frustration thing is something that like for me specifically, I know, I don't know, I can't speak for both of you guys, but like when I'm playing a game, I'm like very cued into these like two sides of myself, which is like one side that's just, I know I like to play garbage games. I know I like to play games that are just there to like take my time for a very long time. Like I played Bloodstained Ritual of the Moon or whatever the new one was. I forgot the subtitle or whatever, but I played the crap out of that game. That game had problems, but I still really liked it because like it did what it was trying to do. It was super janky in some ways, but like I thought it was a cool, good game. I didn't have like a lot of problems with it because it wasn't doing a lot of stuff that like I didn't need to do. Now, does that mean like I can't look back and be like, oh, it's symptomatic of other issues with video games? It's had some issues that like I want to address. I talked about min-maxing on the podcast, like on the last episode, where I was like really frustrated with the whole concept of min-maxing and how it's just become the accepted norm, but like it doesn't have to be that way, and how like there's potential for a better world of gameplay out there that doesn't use min-maxing as a crutch. That's, min-maxing is in Bloodstained too, but I don't feel like I need to dismiss the game on those grounds. And I think if you go back and listen to our podcast, not that you haven't to this commenter who said this stuff, but if you go back and listen to older episodes, we rarely are like, this game sucks. We'll usually say like, this game, you know, I played the crap out of it, had some fun with it, but here are some things that like I had issues with. I can tell you, like, you could play this game and have like a good time with it, but how much more is there to say about that? We talk about like game feel and try to get into like the specifics of what that means on this show a lot. And we talk about those stuff. We pick that stuff apart when it's like, what am I really enjoying about this game? We'll take the time to pick that apart in a way that I think that a lot of other video game podcasts don't do. But we'll also sit back and pick apart some of the stuff that like we have problems with, that we felt was extraneous, blah, blah, blah. And if we're going to compare video games to books, I think that video games have a lot more filler bullshit in them than a lot of books do. And if a book has that kind of filler bullshit, we would address that if we were reviewing the book too. So
there's just one thing I was reading recently about, like, I think just like address like the filler bullshit line in games. I think part of that is because like games are hard to make And it's really easy to add more to a game once you've got the stuff to add in, and it feels like a waste for you to not like add more. And it, that kind of contrasts recently with like what I was, and then like just another thing is like, that's not how you think about like a book, right? Like you don't, maybe if you're like a big like fantasy person and you're doing like a lot of world building or something, you know, there's more stuff to add. But like if you have a book, you're probably trying to tell a story and the story ends and the book ends. Like that's not, it doesn't like keep going. But I think there's something related, and I was reading an article on like board game playtesting and how like this publication was asking some like mildly famous board game designers, like, you know, how do you know like when your game is done? And they're like, or how do you know when to publish a game, like to basically send it to print? And they're like, oh, like, well, when like the players don't have any more feedback and it's done. And you're like, oh, like it's like really different from video games, because a video game is done when like someone decides that the amount of stuff in the game is like commiserate with like the amount of effort and like the price in which they're trying to pay for it, such that they can like optimize shit. Like, I don't think anyone in AAA like wants to make a 60-hour boring ass game, but you kind of have to in a way.
Yeah, it's like the model. Value of it. That's like,
yeah, like it's like the value yeah. prop.
Yeah.
And so you just like don't have that thing in a book. You don't have that really in board games. Or like in a board game, even if you do have that, it's like you print 10 cards instead of 2 cards and have a player choose 1 card per round and have the 10 cards have different abilities. And like your 5 minutes of extra effort just extended the board game playtime by like, you know, 30 hours or something. Whereas in a video game, you do all the upfront effort to like build the thing, and then you feel like you have to pad the shit out of it to make it feel like it's worth it. So there's a lot of inane bullshit in games that it's just fucking annoying. And I think that the three of us are just tired of. Like, it's like, get that shit out of here. Like, I'm tired. I see your bullshit. I'm not trying to engage with it. Like, I don't want to play your bullshit gameplay loop for like 30 more hours. I get it.
See, but that's Kyle. I will engage with the bullshit.
That's not to say that big AAA games are necessarily always bad. Like, I feel like they're like good examples. Like, no. I think like Assassin's Creed Origins is a good example of that, and Odyssey is a horrible example of that, right? It's like Odyssey did like the opposite direction, piling on more shit onto what worked about with Origins. And like, I think directly comparing those games is like so interesting, because like, here's a game that does like the big open world AAA textbook thing like very well and in a very interesting way. And then Odyssey's like, here's a, like 50 more things. Here's more systems. The world's way bigger. Here's more stuff. And it's just like, it's like a beautiful game, like no doubt. But it's like they went way in a weird direction that I was not into. So it's like very, like I feel like there are examples all over of games that are like they do the long thing, but they're good. I do think most games could definitely be like shorter. Like I'm hearing like all sorts of different times, play times for Doom Eternal. There are some people saying like 30 hours. Some are saying 12. And I'm like, I'm hoping it's closer to that 12, but who knows? I guess I'll see.
I think Kyle is the least flexible for sure.
Yeah. I also feel like Kyle, like he'll like a surprising thing. I'm like, oh, I didn't expect him to like that. Like, I don't know. Like,
that's true.
I wouldn't say we're all like so stuck in our ways, you know. Like I feel like maybe I'm the most open-minded because I have to be in my job, because I kind of have to play these games. But also like there are games I played that I didn't expect to like, that I came out the other end being like, oh, that was pretty good, like, you know, like I give everything a fair shake, or I try to.
I'm like somewhere in the middle where like I'll engage with something and play it for 80 hours and then be like, I don't know about that one, guys.
It's like Josh is like peak like negative Steam review after 120 hours. It's like, you know,
yeah,
what?
Yeah, he's that guy.
Yeah, no, it's like when you
500 eat, hours in Skyrim, this game kind of sucks.
I compare everything to food where I'm like, damn, I just ate that whole burrito, but it wasn't
yeah,
even that
good.
Yeah,
it's like when you get like
hungry.
A big order from Taco Bell, you know, and you always regret it. It tastes good sometimes. But you know, it's like at the end of like the meal, you're like, I didn't need to order the extra crunchy taco. You know, it's like, it's
exactly
like that.
Dude. So many gamers are like, why are you complaining? You were hungry and now you're full. And okay, I get that. But also like I was hungry. Now I'm not full. But that the burrito was not like as good as the other place that I had a month ago.
Yeah.
And here's the problems with that burrito. But it was still edible. It was still like good enough for me to eat. You know?
It's fine. Serviceable, you know?
Serviceable. We got the job done. But I want to talk about some of the issues I had with the cilantro wasn't that fresh. The beans were, there was a little too much bean to meat ratio. You know, what have you? Stuff like that. That's what we're talking about. Kyle, if he's the kind of person who, if he opens the burrito and he sees the beans look a little weird, he takes one bite. He's like, the cilantro is really old. He'll throw the burrito out. Katie is a food reviewer, as it were, eats burritos for a living.
I will eat it begrudgingly. I will be like, fuck.
And I think it's like a three.
And then I get food poisoning, you know?
Yeah. It's like when I like a burrito, I will like become that burrito's fucking religious missionary. I would tell everyone.
Yeah. You'll how be like, amazing this is the best burrito in New York City.
Like, I want everyone to know what I like. All that's like, we started a fucking podcast on Disco Elysium. That thing
because
is
you
like,
liked it so much, yeah.
Because we liked it so much. Like, I feel like that's very indicative of my taste. Is like, I will not like a lot, but I very much value what I do like.
You champion
Kyle
things.
Has talked about burritos on this podcast before.
I actually just ate a burrito. Here's my bag.
God, that sounds how I really want a burrito. One. Also, the taquery by my house, they sent out an email saying, oh yeah, well, we're doing takeout only. So it's like, I was like, okay, so if things get dire, I can at least go there to get takeout.
Yeah. Burrito time, baby.
If I start starving, I can just slip out the house, hope a cop doesn't see me and tells me go back indoors. You know.
Okay. So I also played Ori 2. Ori and the Will-O-The-Wisps.
What platform? This is the key.
PC.
Steam or Windows?
Xbox or Game Pass.
Okay, Xbox, so like Windows technically. Okay.
Windows.
Okay. So I'm hearing there's weirdly wild different performance per platform, like Steam, Windows, Xbox One, Xbox One X. Like, I'm sorry, Josh, go on.
No, you're fine. This thing's got, it does have some issues with performance for sure. Like, anytime I'm running into a new place, I know like there's about to be a cutscene that's about to play because the frame rate drops to like 3. And my computer's great. It should run this stuff fine. Yeah. At first I thought like, what the hell's going on with this game? It's like, it seems really weird. Like there's a lot of issues with how it runs. And apparently other people are having this on other platforms. So it's got some of that jank. I'm not the kind of person, funnily enough, to complain about that kind of thing. Because I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, is it making the game anywhere? Unless it's like really, really interfering. And unless it's really interfering with my experience, I don't have that much of an issue with it. But Ori 2, it has a lot of the same strengths and weaknesses as I described in the episode where I talked about Ori 1, which I actually played like just about like a month ago. I didn't even realize Ori 2 was like about to come out. I just saw that it was on Xbox Game Pass and I was like, oh.
It's so weird, right? Like, I felt the same way until like the week running up to it when we're like figuring out who's going to review it and everything. But it was like, yeah, I feel like there's, yeah, I feel like it felt like a game that should have come out last year. Like, I feel like there's like a big press cycle before for it, but now it's like, it's just out. I don't know. It's weird. It did come out of nowhere, but I feel like people are really excited for it still. It was like a weird vibe.
Yeah, maybe like it got an E3 announcement and everyone's talking about it and then it kind of disappeared and now it's just out. The original Ori, I like the jumping. I like some of the puzzle design. I like the overall feel of the game, which is enough to get me to play the whole game in basically every case. When it's a platformer, again, it's a burrito. It's that comfort food. I'm hungry. I don't have any of this food to eat right now. And it's, they got free delivery on Postmates. So I'm getting that burrito. That's how I'm seeing Ori and Ori 2. And Hollow Knight was like that actually. And so now I'm playing this game and it's got like a lot of, but on the issues side, I have like a lot of the same issues with it, which I had with Ori 1, which is that it feels like super gamery. Kyle brought up a great point in that episode, which is that like a lot of the environments are very difficult to read. Mm. And when he said that, something like a bell went off in my head because now I'm playing this game and I am getting hurt by so many things that I have no freaking clue how I'm getting hurt. And I'm like, okay, wait, if I jump here, is that going to hurt me or not? And then I'll do it. And then I get hurt or I die or whatever. And it's the exact same issue, man, where it's like, they have like thorns that you can't tell if it's part of like the background or the foreground, or if some of the thorns are like little jagged rocks that are not even that jagged, where it looks like, oh, in a different video game, you could like climb those because it's just like a kind of textured grooved wall. But then in Ori, you're like, if you land on it, it's like the same as if you were to land on thorns or regular spikes. So that stuff, I don't like that about this game.
Didn't change that at all.
They did not fix it. They did not change that. I don't think that it was brought up to them. They got a lot of fake friends who didn't say anything about it. They were like, yeah, man, I told you that was going to hurt me when it's spikes, bro. What? Yeah, of course. They've gamerized it even more.
Yeah, there's like way more systems, right? Like this is the weird thing that I've heard about it. I'm like, I don't know if this is like a good thing or bad. Like some people are like really into it. So I'm like kind of like, I don't know how to feel about it. Cause like the last game was so simple. It was just like.
It was pretty, last one was pretty gamery. This is like a step more gamery in a way that I almost feel is almost good because it feels more like they're just making this just a video game. It's not going for like the whole art thing.
Twee type thing, yeah.
Even though that stuff is still there, and I think it's a little bit too confident in that stuff. And I actually think it's gotten even more twee, which is not cool.
Oh god.
Because I like the look of it, but it's like definitely something that like I feel like so many game developers have been kind of aping on since
the art is beautiful. It's not unique at all, really, at this point.
Yeah, it's like beautiful, but not unique. That's a good way to put it.
Yes. Gorgeous game. And I think that they've made a lot more like strides in the character models to now they look like 3D and they look like they exist in this kind of like multi-dimensional world, which is really cool. And I like about it, which is cool. But this takes place kind of after the events of the first one, which was sort of like an apocalypse thing going on where they're like everything was dead and stuff. So there it was just like you and a couple homies. But now it's like there's characters and like NPCs, shops, people that you could buy stuff from in this game. There's different weapons. There's different like there's construction in this game. What's funny is that like all of these systems are just stuff that was in the first game, but that just wasn't systematized, created into a system. So there's like a craftsman, right? You collect ore, which is just secrets. It's just secrets. And then you find a little ore and you could take it to this guy. And so if you have like three ore, he does this. He'll like, I'll take out these thorns for you in this area.
Oh, that's why the game's called Ori.
Oh god, please. But when he does that, when he like takes out the thorns, he gives you like a little extra area that you could go to, and then there's like a little like NPC in there that gives you a quest to do. So it's like not even, it's just like walled off content that you just need to find secrets to unlock. If we're gonna pare down the system, that's what it is.
It sounds like a lot has been done in Ori as a response to Hollow Knight. Do you feel that is the case?
Potentially. I think it feels a little bit more Hollow Knight-y now than it did before. Just because there's like more systems in place. But Hollow Knight, I think, is better. Like just period. Because yeah. I liked, for all my issues with that game, I think like it went to way more interesting places than Ori does. And it doesn't have the twee bullshit backdrop that Ori does. I think Ori has it beat in like the running around aspect of like it feels better to just exist in this world and do stuff in it, but it doesn't feel like there's as much lurking in the shadows. It doesn't feel like there's as much to explore. It feels very like solve puzzles, do combat, purchase upgrades, find secrets. That's the whole game. So that's what you got. and it's there. It doesn't have like the mystique that Hollow Knight does, which is what I liked about that game in the first place. So that's my issues with Ori. If you're, you know, again, you could play this game, have a good time with it. I am enjoying the gameplay, but those are my issues with it. They're not deal breakers. They're not going to get me to stop playing it. So it's good enough for me to keep playing all the way through. So if that's what you're looking for, if you want a burrito, if you're hungry, it's a burrito. it's not a great burrito, but it's a burrito.
It's like Chipotle. You're like, that's a burrito.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. It'll fall apart maybe a little bit when you get toward the end.
You might get a virus from the barbacoa. Oh, but, my God. You know?
What?
No, that was the carnitas. It was a carnitas.
Oh, the carnitas.
Carnitas. Really? Damn. Well, I always do the veggie because I like that guacamole and I don't want to pay extra. Last time I went to Chipotle, it was like the most disgusting thing. So I haven't gone back since because it's like I had one bad experience.
Yeah. And the guac is $8.95. I want to say that Ori is pretty good, but it's also... Just note, you'll see this stuff when you're playing the game. It's not like, I'm not like pulling stuff out of my butt here. Dude, the characters real quick. There's an app. Okay, in the first game, spoiler alert for Ori 1. But the bad guy is this owl who is trying to protect its kid. Its eggs. And she thought you were trying to take the egg or do bad stuff to her eggs. So she hates you and she's trying to kill you the whole game. And then at the end, she's like, oh, this little Ori dude was trying to heal the woods. And then she saves the whole world or whatever, but gets blown up in the blast radius of the big spirit bomb that goes off. And this is my made up lore. But these are my explanations for what happens. But she goes and dies in the big spirit bomb thing that happens when she's trying to fix everything, blah, blah, blah. But the egg survives and it hatches into a little baby owl. And that's like your friend at the beginning of the game, except the owl's wing has got little tears in the wing so she can't fly. And then at the beginning of this game, you're trying to get her to fly. And then you go into your little... stack of goodies and you got her mom's feather, and then you put it onto the little owl's arm and the little owl can fly, and you get on the owl's back and
that's
then you're flying
works.
You're flying, and then the owl's like, oh, I'm so happy that I'm flying, and then there's a storm and then the owl crash lands and you land somewhere else, and then you have to go find the owl using platforming and weapons and upgrades that you purchase through vendors. and in which case you go through the water level, the ice level, the desert level, the fire level, the poison level in order to find your owl friend again while being hunted down by other new creatures that they've introduced to the world, which I didn't remember being there before, but now there's like other bad guys that are trying to kill you. So that's the whole setup. But like the owl's like animations are like the puppy dog eyes emoji, like Pixar cute character tropes. It's just like a bundle of those things. And it feels like you're playing a game that's like meant to be like, oh my God, it's so cute. You can't say it's the yarny thing of like, you can't say anything bad about it because it's cute.
it's cute. So it's not bad.
Do you hate fun? Do you hate cuteness? Anyway, it's the setup for it is like, and they take so long, bro. Like, oh my God. Every character talks like the or like meep, 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 meep. It's just like animal noises and shit. And then it has
like
the music.
Animal Crossing.
It's not as cool as Animal Crossing because they got some cool effects going on. Yeah. this game has those like it also starts out with a song that's like it's like a big like sweeping orchestral thing with a voice that's like ah! It's like some weird like Nordic fucking wailing like there's runes in this game, guys. Like you're gonna see runic stuff. That's like a signaling.
Are there any ominous monoliths?
Yeah. But okay. They're like made of wood and stuff.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
Definitely some monoliths, some abandoned structures that are abandoned signs of a world long gone.
That's what I like to see in my video games.
A lot of like things made of like when you're in the water world, there's like sandy stuff and then like fiery stuff where you're like, I can't get past this. I must have to go to the sand level or the fire level to get the power that gets me through there. A lot of that stuff.
Just the control.
Look, I'm not saying it's a bad game because of this stuff, but at this point, you see that stuff. Isn't part of your mind thinking like, oh, this, I know what this is, guys. Like, we know what's going on here. I ain't new, bro. Like, I've been playing Metroidvania games. You know, I know what this is. You're not fooling anyone here. It's not creative. We're not going to say that.
We have to like consider the fact, I think we don't do this, is that like, surely someone was like 15 and got an Xbox One and like Ori was like their first Metroidvania and they're like gonna die on a hill for this game.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, if it's your first Metroidvania, dude, like none of this stuff is gonna register, because it's like, yo, those systems are there for a reason. Like, they were created to begin with because it's like slightly compelling to do. You know, I think they might have had more relevance in their original context than they do now. And that there are better ways for us to go about these things now. But yeah, 15, 20 years later, they're still acceptable. And again, I am still playing the game, so they're acceptable enough for me to not like want to stop playing the game on account of these things. But yeah, I think as people who've been playing video games for a long time, it's like, it's also just like, yeah, you know what that is. You know what they're doing.
It's just a video ass fucking video game.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a video game that if you like cute characters and extremely compressed like Land Before Time, Don Bluth-esque plots, you might get something out of it, but it's not, I'm not gonna like praise it on those grounds. There's another big thing that we are gonna talk about this week, Katie. I'm gonna toss it back to you here.
Oh,
because you've been playing, yes, a little.
I'm playing Call of Duty Warzone, the new free-to-play standalone battle royale game.
Not standalone though, right? Not actually standalone.
You can just download it for free. Standalone.
Well, you were saying before the podcast, like, you still have to download all of Call of Duty.
Not necessarily. Well, it's still technically Warzone. You're downloading Warzone, but it's like 100 gigs. And my theory is because you're basically downloading all of Call of Duty that would like unlock if you were to buy it. But like, what, like, cause it was like a 15 gig download for me because I had already owned Modern Warfare. So that's my theory, but like, I don't know how accurate the theory is. Like, maybe you have to do more. I think it's like maybe 100 something on my hard drive at this point. It's so fucking, it's definitely the biggest game I own. Currently that I have like still downloaded.
So obviously the value for what the game offers is fucking through the roof.
It's through the roof. It is through the roof.
We've got like the price to playtime ratio. We need the price to gigabyte to playtime ratio.
Yes.
That's not been derived yet.
This is the biggest you can get
everything.
Currently.
It's the perfect ratio, it sounds like.
Yes. Yeah. But honestly, so yeah, like because everyone I know is just not leaving their house, it has way upped the people that will hit me up to play games. Because usually, like around Modern Warfare's launch, like a lot of my normie friends were like playing Call of Duty, but like everyone drops off after a couple months. That's just how it is. Like people move on. It's like when Apex Legends launched last year, like I had a lot of friends that were playing Apex Legends and then they all fell off it. But now it's like everyone's back in it, and it's very exciting for me because I am someone who plays these games quite a bit. So it with Warzone, it's great because it's free, it's standalone, so like all my, I feel like even more people I know are playing it, so it's just, I've just been playing it quite a bit because it's like the only socializing I'm really doing right now. Like I on Saturday I played it for like 7 hours, which is fucking insane. Like I literally like looked up and I was like, oh, I literally just spent the whole fucking day playing this stupid game. But it's not stupid. It's quite fun. I wrote a thing last week and I honestly want to retract it because I don't even agree with what I wrote anymore. Because I was very critical of the Battle Royale. But now I'm more into the Battle Royale than the other mode it comes with, which is this mode called Plunder, where instead of being the last person alive, you have to be the person or the team that makes the most money. And like money you find all across the maps, like loot, like in any other Battle Royale. But you want to like bank it and deposit it. And it's just, it's an interesting mode. It's on the same map. It's just like this giant map. That's basically all the Spec Ops co-op mission maps stitched together with like new areas in between. I think there's even an area that's like part of the ground war maps too. So it's like interesting just to see like they just put like all their big maps they made for Modern Warfare, but put them together, but put new stuff around that too. And it's kind of like putting together all the ideas from Modern Warfare proper. But one thing that really is really cool about this, because it definitely feels like they took more lessons from Apex Legends than like how Blackout took a lot of lessons from PUBG. Because like there's pinging now, which is really great, but there's something really cool with the pinging where you can like confirm something. So there's like three little dots underneath each thing you ping. And if someone like is like, oh, I'm going to go this way, and you can like ping it too, and it will like fill in a second dot of like, oh yeah, I saw that you pinged that. So it's kind of like there's more teamwork in that respect, which is cool. The downside is that when you're playing with randos, people aren't as like playing with team friendly or whatever. So the other big thing is that when you die for the first time, you go into this thing called the Gulag, and it's basically like a 1v1. It's kind of like gunfight, which is like 2v2 in these small maps. But it's like 1v1 on one of the, it's like on the prison gunfight map. And you have, if you take out the other person, then you get to redeploy into the match and rejoin your team. But if you lose it, your team can still redeploy you, but they have to make like $4,500, which is like found via loot through killing people and picking up their cash. It's like pretty easy to find money, but still like a high enough point. So it's not like you can just like expect to redeploy someone automatically or whatever. And it's a really interesting system because it kind of gives us like, it's like an Apex where you run to a respawn beacon if you get their like whatever card. But there's like more, it's like, oh, you still have to like show some skill on like overtaking another player to get the chance to respawn back in. But you also have to like rely on your teammates if you don't lose or win that battle so they can spawn you back in. And there's like really fun like tug of war of like you get like a second chance, but like not necessarily. And it's, the downside is that in my experience in playing with random people is they haven't like made an effort to like respawn me if I die in the Gulag and don't spawn back in. So yeah, it's like super annoying. I'm like, dude, like, are you kidding me? Like my friend and I were playing a match last night. And we had a rando as like the third person, and we were on like a different chat, so we weren't like in the game chat at all. And my friend dropped, because I had died, and my friend dropped money. It was like, oh, if we combine our money, we'd have enough to like bring you back in. So he was like trying to like tell the guy, and it just like wasn't working, so like just drop his cash. And then the guy picked it up, and then it was like okay, cool, you can like spawn you back in. And then the guy like went to the buy station to spawn me back in, but then like the guy had just bought other stuff. The guy did not spawn me back in. It was like such an annoying, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, he dropped money for you and you like to bring me back in because the guy wasn't getting the hint. And it just like, it was very annoying. But yeah, it's like situations like that where it's like, I'm finding that I'm having the most fun when I have a full three-person party playing, because we can actually communicate, because I've learned that Call of Duty players are mostly stupider than like randos I've encountered in like Apex Legends. Like, it's just people don't want to work together, that don't understand the idea of like a squad in a battle royale and like teamwork, which has been very frustrating. Oh yeah,
or they just don't care
too. Yeah, it's like people that when they die, they just quit. They quit the game. And it's like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just like a bummer, because they just launched solos today, which I'm hoping will remedy this. Like, I'm hoping the people that play the three people squads, which is probably what I'll stick with, are going to be like more like actual down with teamwork and redeploying people and not quitting when they die, or not just like ignoring the fact that I'm hanging out and here waiting to be respawned in or whatever. So I don't know. I think it's really fun. It's really interesting. I still think the shooting in Modern Warfare just feels great. So it's nice to have that in like a battle royale that's like doing interesting things and iterating and not just like feeling like it's just like hopping on the battle royale trend. It's like definitely doing its own thing, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, man, online multiplayer, baby. That's always a fun world to immerse yourself into. Like yeah, League of Legends has been interesting. For sure.
Yeah. You guys should jump into Warzone with me.
I'll start that download and finish it maybe in 2 weeks because of Corona connections. Slow ass internet.
Should we wrap up?
We try to
wrap it up. Let's wrap
it up. By the way, I've had my computer plugged in. It shows that it's charging, but it's been slowly going down. It's like 40%, and I don't know why the fuck it's not charging. I think it's that I have like so many things plugged in because I have my Ethernet. Dude, it's like, why isn't it charging?
It got it.
Dude, it's annoying. Anyway.
We should do some special Corona quarantine content. You know what I'm saying?
I want to do some streams.
If you have a little extra time, we'll try to do something in the coming weeks. So keep an eye out for that. We'll talk about it more after we finish recording and then see if we can't do a little some, because you know I'm a little little bored sometimes. I'm looking for stuff to do. I'm not going to the bars and stuff like that like I usually do, to the clubs, you know,
the club.
I don't actually go to the club. I go to bars and like breweries and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm a bar, not really the club person. They closed down my favorite brewery near my house, which is so sad. Like recently, not like before the coronavirus stuff, like they're just couldn't renew their lease. I guess like the landlord was just like not having it. So they just closed down unexpectedly. And I was like, so sad.
What brewery was it?
It's just like some local one.
Mm.
And I can't think. I always call it like Sunset Brewery, but that's like a different brewery. man. But anyway, I like spent my first birthday there, and it was always a place I would just take people to. It was like over on 9th Avenue, but it was I'm just very sad. It was just like such a sudden like,
yeah,
we're closed now because our landlord didn't want to renew our lease.
Where'd you get your glasses?
My glasses?
Yeah, those
Warby
glasses.
Parker.
Those are Warby's?
Yeah.
Wow.
These are Warby's. Why?
They look good. I like them.
Oh, thank you.
I'm trying to jack your style here. These are Warby's, but they're too... I want like ones that are too big for my face like that, you know?
Yeah. I want to get new... I've had these for like a couple of years now, and I need to get new... They're getting a little grimy, you know? You know when you have your glasses for a long time, and even though you clean them regularly, there's like a point where they just stop like...
They don't want to be clean. They're like,
yeah,
fuck
exactly.
You.
It's like, come on.
These ones are well, getting there.
Yeah, these are definitely, they're like a little crooked now too. They don't like stand like, I definitely fucked them up somehow.
I hate that.
Anyway.
I don't take care of mine at all. I like sleep with them on and then like I wake up and they're like,
oh, I just, under my butt. And when I, yeah, like when I nap, sometimes I'll just like, fuck, I fucked up my like, glasses.
Whoops. I have other pairs, so I'm not too scared, but you know. Okay. What else we got, folks? Anything? Before we wrap up,
stay safe. Wash your hands. Don't
go
the
wash
fuck
your
outside.
Hands.
We'll go outside.
I've touched my face like 50
distance.
Times while recording this podcast, and every time I've been like, "Fuck."
Yeah.
But
if
you
feel like going outside,
don't do it.
Join us on the Bad End Discord and talk with us and the crew.
Yeah,
because we have fun on there. We play some games.
Let's play some Animal Crossing soon. I share my friend code in our Discord for all the Bad End heads out there.
Yeah.
Join
me. And thanks for, you know what? If you got some criticisms for us, you can tweet at us. We might address it on the show, but we're not taking it personally. We get it. Sometimes you got some crit, we can address it. And I think hopefully we did that for y'all this episode a little bit. I do understand that like it can be a little bit difficult to be like, what are these people, what are they like, what are they into? But like, you know, sometimes it's more fun to Sometimes you talk about the issues that you got with some stuff, sometimes, and you talk about some of the stuff you like, and you take the good with the bad, and games have good, they got bad, and that's the world we live in. And let's keep living in it, and let's do it safely for the next couple weeks until Baden comes back. Cause now we need each other more than ever, you know? And so I'm glad to have you, Kyle and Katie, and everyone on the Discord, all my online friends. Glad to have you all during these times, because I don't want to infect my real life friends. So I can't do that to you through the internet. So it's good. Anyway, we are Bad End Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We are on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. We are on Gmail at badendpod@gmail.com. It's very helpful if you rate us and review us on iTunes. So do that if you have not done so already. If you can leave a written review, that's like extra, extra helpful. So we actually haven't seen one of those in a while. So I personally would like to see one or two, you know, do that with your coronavirus time. Leave a little written review. It'll be helpful. Hopefully 5 stars. If you don't want to leave 5 stars, maybe just don't review us. just don't do it. But if you do, be our guest. We are part of Super Culture Network, which also contains Bullet Points, which has a podcast and a website. They got a bunch of great rating on there, so go check them out. And we also have Savoir Faire, which is part of a Super Culture Review podcast. So check that out. That's a Disco Elysium podcast that we had talked about earlier in the show. So go check that out. Savoir Faire, a Disco Elysium podcast. We're putting out a new episode soon. Had one last week, and we got some good content for you on Disco Elysium. So go check that out. And we will see you all in a couple weeks. Later.
See ya. Good.